For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everybody, to class for Parshas Tetzaveh, 5773, and it's Erev Purim. Also, Purim this year falls out on Shabbos, Motzei Shabbos and Sunday. So we're going to have a grand time going from Shabbos Zachor, where we read the extra paragraph about the war against Amalek. And that's Purim related too, because Haman was a villain from Amalek, and Purim story is one of the vanquishing of Amalek. And then right after Shabbos, immediately we read the Megillah, the Book of Esther, and then we have Purim Day Sunday. It's a wonderful time, but anyhow, it's exciting. Few days coming up, and we have a very interesting parsha, and I'd like to tie it in with Purim if I can. So the parsha, and of course, one more time, just to orient us, we are trying to deliver a Devar Torah that would be appreciated by any Jew anytime. That's our theme. So what do we do with the parsha of Tetzaveh? Tetzaveh is one of those parshas that you look at and you're not really sure what to do with. It's all about making garments for the high priest. So just like last week, the entire parsha deals with architecture of the tabernacle. This one deals with whatever the word is for the making of clothing. Tailoring, I guess. Design and tailoring of clothing. And then the second half is with sacrifices that the priests have to bring. So when you first look at the parsha, you're not really sure what to make of it, much less for any Jew any day. So let me.
You don't think this is gender based?
Which one? The parsha?
You're not sure what to do with it because it has to do with clothing and the tailoring of clothing. You say this isn't a gender problem? Seems irrelevant to men.
I see. Yeah, and then it's all about men's clothing, too. So, on top of that, no, there is something very, very meaningful here, and it is kind of gender based. We'll see. All right. So let me first tell you what many of the standard commentators speak about in relation to this parsha. I would say that there are two basic three streams. One is, let's look at the great holiness of the high priest and the very tremendous importance of his work. And if we see that the Torah prescribes for him such beautiful, such lavish clothing, such great honor, we should learn from here just how important his job is. Okay, so we could go on that angle, talk about the holiness of the high priest, which is not really of particular interest to any Jew at any time, I would submit, humbly. You could also take the approach that the sages tell us that each one of the eight vestments has a certain symbolism which affects atonement for various sins. So, which one is the atonement for Lashon Hara? I forget which is that one. Maybe it's the breastplate, I think, is atonement for injustice in courts. And maybe it's the Me'il that atones for Lashon Hara. You could take that approach, which also is not necessarily going to be of great interest to any Jew at any time. What are we going to talk about? So once again, with the help of my good friend Alan and some of his sources, and it turns out week after week that this book by the rabbis Jungreis and their mother, Rebbetzin Jungreis, is really always on target with messages that are appropriate for the times. We're going to talk about the importance of clothing in general. And here are a few lines from the Jungreis Sefer, Torah for Your Table. Questions like this. What difference does it make what one wears? Another sentence. By that logic, meaning if you're going to take a kind of an indifferent approach to clothing, you could ask some other questions. Like, does it matter whether a soldier wears a uniform? Or a policeman, or whether a doctor wears a white coat. How do you feel when you walk into the doctor and he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt versus a nice medical coat? Doctor, did you wear a white medical coat in your practice?
It depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
In surgery, you wear green.
Right. In surgery, you wear surgical. You wear scrubs. Is there a difference between wearing jeans and wearing formal attire? Is there a difference between dressing modestly versus dressing immodestly? In other words, the real question is, can anyone truly claim that what he or she wears does not influence his or her conduct or lifestyle? I think we would all agree that clothing makes a difference. Now, you could think about that on a more analytical sense. Is it more impressive or is it more expressive? And maybe it's both. In other words, sometimes the person says, I want to project a certain image of myself, therefore I will dress X, Y, and Z. Other times a person, other people might say, I want to be like something that maybe I'm not yet, and therefore I will dress a certain way which will hopefully influence me to be like that. In other words, there's an expressive effect, there's also an impressive effect. I once read that expression, impressive. I thought that was very, very wise and something that could help us understand ourselves. But I think that we would all agree, I think everyone will agree that there is a connection between the externality of what we wear, and that also may include, you know, things like makeup, things like jewelry, and body ornaments, and so forth, and who we are inside. Can we all kind of agree on that? Okay. A few more just free-flowing thoughts on this topic. You all have been in this class for some time, and you've heard me talk about something which really helps me understand us, which is the various levels of our being. We have our bodies, we have our emotions, we have our intellect, and we have our godly soul. Right? Remember me talking about that? And I thought it was interesting, I thought about this today, that our emotions are... If you'll take that as kind of like a progression from the bottom up, if you will, literally, emotions are kind of caught in between the body and the intellect, right? And I think it's a pretty fair analysis to say that our emotions at times are swayed by the body or the more base or physical parts of us. Sometimes they're swayed by the more intellectual or spiritual sides of us. We have different kinds of emotions. We can have more bodily emotions and more intellectual and soulful emotions. And I think clothing is very much the same way. Because clothing affects our emotional state. If we wear clothing that highlights the body, it is going to engender corresponding feelings in that direction. If we wear clothing that are more represent spiritual ideals, I think that will sway our emotions in the direction of the spiritual. So coming back to where we started from, the idea of the soldier or the policeman or the doctor, or the idea of wearing formal wear versus casual wear, I think that we would agree that when we wear clothing that's more refined, more dignified, it will make us feel more refined and more dignified. If we wear, certainly if we wear a Jewish attire, for men that would be the kippah, or the talis, or the tefillin, or if for women to wear what we call modest attire, it makes us feel more spiritual. And I don't think I'm saying anything new, but it's just something to be aware of. And therefore, when we talk about our, you know, being Jewish, what that means to us, and what it means to accentuate our soul, our godly intellect, and to try to raise that and let that be on a higher plane and fulfill the calling that we have as Jews, then we are going to want to pay attention and care about what we wear, how we dress, and so forth. And it's not just a frivolous thing, but it actually has power. And that is really what our Parsha is teaching us. The Parsha is teaching us to take clothing seriously. It's not just pomp and ceremony. We're not dressing the Kohen Gadol just because he's cool. The Torah is saying that whenever you talk about anything, clothing is part of the formula. Okay. Now, if we can deepen this just a little bit, I would like to talk about a word, and that word is tzniut. Tzniut. Some people, when they hear that they say, oh, that means when a woman wears skirts below the knee. Okay, I would like to talk about what that word means, and I think that I would like to clear up a misconception and perhaps a mistranslation of that word. The word sneus or tsanua means hidden. So if you were to ask people on the street, why is dressing associated with sneus, they would say, because you're hiding the body. How many people would agree with that? With that definition of a translation of tzniut. Is that no? Okay, Jennifer says no. Do you think that that's what the word tzniut means? Hiddenness means hiding the body.
Not entirely, but
not entirely. She said. Okay. All right.
The opposite is Louis
uncovering.
Uncovering. And that has a physical, sexual implication. So, yes.
So, tzniut is the covering of that.
Tzniut is the opposite.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Again, it is more like protection. Protection. And separation.
Protection
and separation.
Yeah,
extremely deep. So what the rabbi's referring to, because he said it when he's talking about Purim and what's going to be taking place this weekend, and you've got Bris Milah comes Yom Rishon, and if you want to get into garments, and that means that's where, and you're talking about for men, that's where it's really going to begin.
Okay. I don't want to get too deep,
right,
but
okay.
Jennifer, what did you have to say?
I'd say it's a matter of signals, and tzniut is a signal that the person is not to be cheapened.
Okay. So what is the hidden? The word Hebraically tzanua does mean hidden. So what is it? What are we hiding? What is this hiddenness?
You're going to have to get to know this person better. This, not everything is apparent on the surface.
Aha.
Not everything is apparent on the surface.
Very good.
And there's a certain distance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're onto something. Yes.
With makeup, you put it on. Yeah. You have a blemish or something like that. You want to hide the blemish because it's a distraction.
Okay.
So I think what we're trying to hide is the stuff that will distract a person
mm-hmm.
from knowing
from real
who
essence.
We really are.
Okay.
Man.
But you're still saying you're covering over.
Yeah, but it's
okay.
a hiding. You're
yeah.
hiding the stuff
okay.
that's a distraction.
You're still saying hiding, and you're saying that you're saying the hidden is what's under what you're covering. I think
it's a social signifier. This person is putting themselves in a certain camp.
You're both saying the same thing.
No, and it's a, you see, there was an Israeli woman, and she found out that American businesswomen dress very modestly at the office. Okay, having nothing to do with their religion or anything else. People at a certain status dress very modestly at the office. And she was amazed. Because
mm-hmm.
in Israel, people don't do that. And she thought it was such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of distance and respect. It's sending a signal of distance and respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, very good. You see, it's a topic, it's a... Pardon the expression, it's a provocative topic because, you know, we're talking about who we are. I once saw a book on trying to define tzniut. It's a great book. I recommend it. The author is Gila Mandelson. She's written books about relationships, and there's a line in there. She says, we should be attractive, but not attracting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, one more comment.
Okay, the same person that you're talking about who dresses in a career suit and they appear to be modest at their place of work could be the same person though on Saturday nights going to a discotheque and wearing almost nothing.
Right.
So it's where that person is and the way that they see themselves. It's not the way... everybody else is going to see them either, but it's the way we present ourselves into this world and why.
Right. Okay. So hopefully we're going to walk out of here, not everything revealed, but at least we will hopefully will have a better definition, working definition, I think, for the concept of tzniut and really the word tzniut. Now, again, I started with a simplistic definition, which I think many people would agree, and that says when you're the concept of tzniut is hiding the body or the external, and that's what the hiddenness comes from. The purpose of which we could discuss, but that is what we are hiding. Now, if that is our definition, I think we run into language problems with various verses and various statements from the Talmud. There's a famous verse which is from the prophets, and that it's often quoted. It's one of the end of one of the Haftorahs, and it says that how should a person live? How should a person behave? A Jewish person, Hatsnea leches im Elokecha, walking hiddenly with this word tznias with God, walking with tznius, with God. Now, if tznius just meant covering your body, I don't think that's the meaning of the verse when he says that when you walk with God, you should make sure that you're covered. That's not what it means. So something, hatznei aleches, walking with tznius, is something that needs a better definition. In the spirit of Purim, I will read to you a passage from the Talmud, Tractate Megillah, which is all about Purim, and let me read to you from page 13b. God does not withdraw his eyes from a righteous person, meaning that God is ever mindful of the deeds of the righteous and rewards them measure for measure. even generations later, as illustrated by the following. As a reward for the tznius, this word again, tznius, that was exhibited by Rachel, our matriarch, she merited that the modest Saul descended from her. Okay, as a reward for Rachel's tznius, she merited a descendant Saul who was had tznius. As a reward for the modesty that was exhibited by Saul, he merited that the modest Esther descended from him. So here we have three people, not all men, not all women, that are described as having tznius, as having exhibited tznius. And it was a measure for measure reward for what they exhibited, that they merited a descendant that also exhibited that quality. Now, what do we mean by the tznius that Rachel had? What do we mean by the tznius that Shaul had? And what do we mean by the tznius that Esther had? What was the modesty exhibited by Rachel? I.e., where do we see that she displayed modesty? For it is written, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to come to this. All right. This is what Rachel said to Yaakov when they were courting. I have a sister, Leah, who is older than I, and my father will not marry me off before he marries her off. To prevent this from occurring, because Laban would try to trick him and marry off Leah first, Yaakov gave Rachel signs, i.e. passwords, through which he would be able to identify her as Rachel, thereby preventing Laban from substituting Leah for Rachel. When the wedding night arrived and Rachel saw that her father was indeed planning on secretly substituting Leah for her, she said to herself, "Oy, now my sister will be put to shame." She therefore conveyed the prearranged signs to Leah. Therefore, because Rachel acted modestly, she merited that the modest Saul descended from her. Hello? Because Rachel acted modestly by giving the password to Leah? What does that have to do with modesty? You all have answers? This is, to me, one of the most perplexing questions in the Talmud. Okay, Lenore, we haven't heard from you.
Could it be that she was acting modest in the sense that she was putting her sister ahead of herself, saying that she cared so much for someone else and their well-being that her well-being took a second place?
Fine. That's a wonderful quality, but modesty? Call it
selflessness.
Call it humility, maybe, but modesty, tznius. Tznius, the word that we previously defined as covering the body. What in the world does this have to do with that?
But doesn't tznius also mean modesty?
Yeah, but what does modesty mean? We our simplistic definition of modesty is that we are trying to cover the more physical part of the human being. And what does that have to do with this? And it's part of our evidence that modesty is more than we think. Okay, I really want to move on. Let me just, the people that we haven't heard from, I'll take Dina.
Well, wasn't it because she gave the signals to her sister Leah in a way that Leah did not know what was going on?
Leah did not know, or
Leah did not know that these were signals. Rachel gave her the signals. And Leah did not know anything about it.
Okay,
Rachel diminished her own self in such a way that Leah would never know what Rachel had done for her.
Okay, so again, let's come up with another word for that. Again, selflessness. You mean like she wouldn't get credit for it? She wouldn't be able to turn around and say, "Boy, Rachel saved my, you know, did this for me."
Yeah, and she didn't want.
What
to
do we call that?
Feel embarrassed or
wanting.
Something.
Yeah. But
she put Leah's feelings.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Again, call that selflessness. Call that caring for another person. Call that compassion. But why call it modesty? And let's move on. Saul. So therefore, Rachel acted modestly. So she merited Saul. What modesty did Saul exhibit? For it is written, but of the matter of the kingdom of which Samuel spoke, he did not tell him. Right, he was hidden. Samuel, after Samuel anointed Saul as king, Saul met his uncle, who asked him where he had been. Saul replied that he had gone to look for lost donkeys and that he could not find them. He went to seek counsel from Samuel. When his uncle asked him what Samuel had told him, Saul replied only that Samuel had told him that the donkeys had already been found. Saul, however, was modest in that he did not reveal to his uncle that he had been anointed king. Okay, modest, as in terms of not flaunting. Again, what is this tznius? And what about Esther? What was the modesty of Esther? Guess what that was. I don't know where it even says it. You know what the modesty of Esther was? Esther did not tell
that she was Jewish.
What is this modesty? That's just called being a good strategist.
Self-preservation.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the conscious use of self. So if you have sneers in regard to God, then you've chosen to walk in his ways and do whatever you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how is that tznius? What'd you say? What was those words again? It's the conscious use of self.
It's the conscious use of self.
Interesting. Kind of like...
It's the same thing as being a parent. You're not... Sometimes when you're angry at the kid, you don't show it. Mm-hmm. And then other times for discipline, you put on being angry.
Because you're in control of yourself. You're not losing yourself. Okay, very good. Very good. Isn't this provocative, Aunt Joyce?
I don't understand the word.
We didn't
get to yet.
We didn't get to see it. Okay, we've got to move on. I'm going to finish. Okay. Yeah. Everybody knows that. But
I don't know how it applies.
Exactly. Very good. Okay, I'm going to finish what I have to say, and then I'll listen to all. I'm almost done. Okay. These are not portrayals of tznius in dressing, all these incidents in the Talmud and in that verse in the prophets. Rather, tznius. Now, these are my own thoughts. I'm not reading this from anyone else. I'm just quoting myself. I'd like to quote myself before I speak. Rather, tznius is the concept of identifying with one's inner being, the part of us which is not our body. Rather, it's our emotions, our intellect, our soul. In other words, the real me. Covering and de-emphasizing the body is not the tznius. It's just a means to achieve tznius. The hiddenness is revealing the hidden part of ourselves. Tznius means, and Jennifer, you were very close in your definition to the one I was thinking. Tznius means becoming the part of me which is the hidden part. The great patriarchs and matriarchs described here were the ultimate tznuim. No matter what was going on the outside, no matter what the perception was, you know, Rachel is supposed to become the bride of Yaakov and become the matriarch of the Jewish people. Whatever was going on the outside, she was focused on who am I on the inside? What is my role? What is my obligation at this moment? At this moment, I'm focusing on the right thing that I have to do. I've got to save my sister from shame and embarrassment. And I don't care what's going on around me. I'm focusing on the inside. Saul, I have just been anointed the king of Israel. That's what's going on the outside. That's not what's going on the inside. That's not the essence of who I am. Esther, my goodness. Esther, to live as the queen of Persia, to live with Ahasuerus, and to know exactly who she is at every moment, and not losing sight of that, not being distracted by what's going on the outside, but to be totally, totally true and clear to herself, this is true tznius. And what I'd like to say to any Jew at any time is that if you really want to discover who you are, look at the Torah. Because that is the treasure of Torah and the Torah way of life. If you want to know who you are, don't go outside. Don't walk on the street. I mean, I'm constantly struck. This week, my wife and I, we went to a furniture store. We had to buy something. And, you know, the stores today, with screens up showing a rock concert, what does that have to do with a furniture store? And just everything is glitz, and everything is allure, and everything is a facade. And I'm struck by the bankruptcy within modern life of what the essence of a person is. This is what we have to gain from the Torah and from the Torah way of life. And to just tie that into Purim, listen to this incredible thought. Rav Volba, of blessed memory. What is Purim? It is the holiday of the hidden miracle. Right? Hashem was hidden from the outside, but boy, was he there. Hashem was there in a big way, but not out there in your face. He was hidden, but because of his hiddenness, we were able to perceive how much he really, really was there. If Hashem lives in this way, shouldn't we emulate him? The greatest us, the greatest we, is that which lives beneath the surface. By de-emphasizing the physical, we can discover who we really are. This is the joy of Purim. The joy of Purim is just as we uncover God's presence in truth. When he's hidden on the outside, we can discover that about ourselves too. That's the meaning of Tznius. Okay? Any Jew, any time. Happy Purim. Yes. Sure.
Of artist's sake.
Yes.
I know she likes words. I want to focus on the consonant of couple. Sayon. As in Sneus.
Uh-huh.
As in Sayan. As in Sion.
Exactly.
You know, Sayan is to point out. Sion is of the mountain somewhere in Israel. You know, it's a high point. You know, you can point it out. There it is.
Uh-huh.
But Hatsnea or Stephen is also modesty.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost seem like they're opposites. Maybe they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that you like.
Can I just add one?
Yes,
more?
You can add.
All right, so I want to put in the word tzaddik. Because the real tzaddik. Is the hiddenness within that tzaddik. They're not out there flaunting that they do all these wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't promote whatever it is. They're doing this in a very quiet, subtle way, and becoming this beautiful example.
Yeah, that tzaddik quote.
Yeah.
And also, the letter itself, the tzaddik letter, tends to be a little pompous.
Mm.
Think about it. How it stands up there with two heads and higher than everything else.
It even borrowed a letter from its neighbor, because the real letter is tzaddik. The reason why people say tzaddik is because it took the kuf from its neighbor. And it's saying, look at me, I'm a tzaddik.
Yeah.
That kuf wasn't even yours.
Right. So anyway. I know that you like to play with
it. Yeah, thank you.
Overt and covert.
Thank you. Did you get it?
I'm leaving.
Did you get it?
That's why I'm going home and taking off these jeans.
Listen, Aunt Joyce, we like you the way you are. We don't change.
We don't know the
jeans are modest. Those jeans are very modest.
Oh, okay.
Very modest.
No, but suppose you want to be physically attractive.
So, yeah, there is a place for that, but that should be at home. That should be at home. A lot of the modern day religious speakers, they say, how come it is that women, observant women, spend thousands of dollars on their shetel, and they wear it when they go outside, and when they come back home, when they're supposed to be with their husband and their children, they take it off and put on a tichel. They say it should be the opposite. In the marketplace, wear the tichel, and home, wear the shekel.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta.
Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.